and welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. Joining us on the line is the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, it's been a while. We took a bit of a break. I think a much-needed break for both of us. Time to recharge the batteries.
Well, I think so, Rob. I had a few speaking engagements. And in fact, I'm in New York right now on a uranium symposium tomorrow. But I saw some baseball games. I dipped a line in the water, caught a few trout, so came back revamped and refreshed and ready to go.
Okay, good stuff. Well, last time out, Mickey, we were talking about plutonium. We are switching the focus today onto nuclear waste and how to safely and store and dispose of nuclear waste. We're talking about both weapons-grade plutonium, waste from nuclear power plants as well, but let's kick it off with the different types of nuclear waste. We're talking high-level, intermediate-level, low-level. Give us a brief overview of each.
Well, radioactive waste comes from a variety of activities. Most generally, the biggest part is from nuclear power generation, but we also have waste from research, from medical products, nuclear medicine, etc. The danger of nuclear waste can be from a few days to well over a million years, and like you say, it can be broken down into three types. Low-level waste, which is can be segregated and stored. An example of that would be the WIPS site in my home state of New Mexico. Low to intermediate waste, near-surface disposal, basically. Put it in canisters and bury it. And then you have the high-level waste, and this is the really nasty stuff generated by the nuclear fuel cycle, and that requires either deep burial or partitioning, transmutation of the radionuclides, etc. But the world really hasn't dealt with that problem at this time.
And I've read, Mickey, that nuclear waste, or the high-level waste, makes up just about 3% of the total volume of nuclear waste. Is that about right?
I didn't see that factoid, but it makes sense to me. You know, the high-level waste is really just fuel rods, spent fuel rods from the burning in nuclear power plants.
How much of this waste is there out there in the world today, Mickey? And is it it's increasing every year, I would imagine, because nuclear power is becoming more popular as well.
Well, it certainly is, and my numbers came out at generating something on the order of 12,000 tons of high-level nuclear waste a year, which, I think it would fill a couple of swimming pools, Olympic-sized swimming pools, something like that.
Right. And the question that we're facing today is, what do we do with all this nuclear waste? At one time, I think we thought there was a pretty good handle on this high-level dangerous stuff, and that was to bury it deep into the earth. Yucca Mountain in Nevada was thought to be an ideal solution. Mickey, what happened there?
Well, it became a political football in the United States, and after billions of dollars spent and fits and starts, it's basically on hold right now and not progressing. And it's not only the United States that really hasn't dealt with this problem. Most countries in the world have not dealt with it, although Sweden and Finland have probably made the most progress at this point.
Yeah, and not too far from where I live, Mickey. Kincardine, Ontario, the Bruce Nuclear Plant, they're looking at an intermediate-level waste disposal site. They're looking about going about 700 meters deep into the bedrock, but it's only about a mile or so from the shores of Lake Huron, and that's raising concerns. You know, a lot of people, some people saying, doesn't matter how far deep you're going, look how close you are to a major source of drinking water for North America. So concern over that as well. It's a tough situation.
Well, it certainly is, and we as human beings seem to continue to ignore the problem. You know, although there are obvious solutions, you know, it all starts with a nuclear fuel cycle, and starts with mining of uranium and a concentration of that into yellow cake, which is not very dangerous, then that yellow cake is converted to a gas called uranium hexafluoride. Then it's enriched because natural uranium does not contain enough fissile U-235 to use in a plant. So you got to concentrate that to about 4% uranium-235. At that point, it's converted into hard ceramic pellets, which are loaded into fuel rods, and that's what makes the electrical energy. But the problem is you end up with these fuel rods, and they're only partially burned up because the waste products in these fuel rods end up absorbing neutrons and killing off the nuclear reaction. So you generate a lot of nasty stuff with these partially burned-up fuel rods, fission products, beta and gamma radiation, and then the actinides, which we talked about before. They're very long-lived and emit alpha particles. So that's what constitutes the high-level waste. Yeah.
Well, what are your thoughts, Mickey, in terms of burying this? You know, whether it's 2,200 feet down to into the bedrock, not far from Lake Ontario, or deep into Yucca Mountain. What are your thoughts? I mean, you know geology, obviously. Does this sound like it would have been a half decent solution, a fairly safe solution?
Well, I think that is one of the obvious solutions for the long term disposal of these wastes. There's been various ideas proposed, but deep geological repositories are probably make the most sense. There's been proposals to blast this stuff into outer space, deep boreholes, rock melting. One of the ones that makes a lot of sense to me, but once again, it's a geopolitical football, would be disposing of it in subduction zones away from populated areas where it basically gets subducted down into the mantle and recycled. But all these proposals, oceanic disposal, Antarctic ice sheets, et cetera, they've either not been implemented or they're no longer permitted in a couple of the cases, or they were never permitted by international treaty.
Now, that process that you spoke of earlier, is that called downblending? That's one of the things that I came across, where the plutonium would be mixed with a chemically inert material called an inhibitor, then buried deep in salt caverns?
Well, that's certainly one idea, but the initial disposal, they generally are encased in some sort of glass and then put into steel containers and shielded. Or either that, or you go through a process of ion exchange where you reduce the volume and really concentrate this. So the Aussies have developed a synthetic rock product to do this. But regardless of what you do with it, it makes the most sense to bury it deep geologically, no matter what other processes you use initially.
Yeah, I guess the ideal solution would be to be in a position where we can recycle 100% of this stuff and make use of it, right? So it doesn't have to be stored somewhere. It can be used over and over and over again until it's done.
Well, and that's the great conundrum here, especially in the United States, where right now we just keep storing it in swimming pools next to the reactors to keep it cool. But several countries in the world reprocess nuclear waste and reuse it through mixed oxide fuels, reprocess, recycle, and basically make what's called a closed-end nuclear cycle versus an open-end where it's only used once. The Russians do this, France, UK, India, Japan, another number of other countries. But once again, it becomes, with all countries tied up in politics, we have the technology through fast reactors, breeder reactors, thorium reactors to recycle most, reprocess and recycle most nuclear fuel. And if we did it with breeder reactors, fast breeder reactors, you not only recycle the uranium and plutonium, but all the actinides, and you, theoretically, you can provide up to 60 times the energy in an open cycle reactor. Problems, once again, have to do with politics, concern about nuclear proliferation, which doesn't really make a lot of sense because it's a lot easier to build a bomb with a plutonium producing reactor. Nuclear terrorism, now certainly that has some merit in this day and age. Siding is a problem because no one wants it in their backyard.
That's right.
You got the bananas that build absolutely nothing anywhere near anything types. But the real impediment, I think, is to reprocessing is the economics of it. It simply is not economic. It's very expensive to develop these reactors, and governments around the world have failed to commit to it, especially when uranium is as cheap as it is today.
Yeah. Well, maybe we're just going to have to keep our fingers crossed on technological advances. I'll read you a quote from AmericanEnergyIndependence.com. If technology continues to advance for the next 100 years at the pace we've witnessed in the past, then future technology will solve many of the problems we face today. And for this reason, it's safe to assume that engineers in the 22nd century and beyond will not consider nuclear waste too great of a problem to solve. It kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly does to me. I have a reputation of being a cornucopian versus a Malthusian, so I take the tactic that we will find and use and solve the problems when we need to have them done, and good old American ingenuity and technology engineering certainly has solved a lot of problems we've had in the past.
Okay, well, let's wrap it up on that note. Mickey, you have a Yankees baseball game to go to tonight. Have fun, and we'll get together in a couple of weeks.
Okay, Rob, looking forward to it.
That's Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com, and you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.